Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 826.RV2213, certificate number 50168, the NATO phonetic alphabet.
You were, I was going to say an airman, but that means you're in the Air Force. Right?
I was in the Civil Air Patrol, and I, initially I was an airman. Yeah.
But you're an aviator. You had a pilot's license.
When I was young, or when I was in the CAP, our uniforms looked enough like Air Force uniforms that when I was on base, I would be treated like an airman. I was, you know, I was just a kid, just a teenager, but...
You could still, like, you don't have a license anymore, right?
No, you have to keep current, and I am not current.
Do you feel like you could still fly, though, if you had
to?
Like, in an action movie, you jump behind the stick and...
Yeah. I mean, every airplane now has a checklist, so you would just pull the checklist out and go, let's see here. Oh, right.
I have a clipboard. I'm good.
Carburetor heat. But, you know, flying an airplane is pretty intuitive once you realize, you know, that your feet are involved.
Right, the feet. Yeah. Does that mean you know all of the radio alphabet? Is that a part of aviation?
Yeah, the phonetic alphabet. I memorized it back in a time when... kids were still expected to memorize things, unlike now when you're supposed to, I don't know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to feel them in your emotions.
You're just supposed to ask AI.
But yeah, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, Foxtrot, Golf. Oh, well, now it has changed, I think. But anyway, Golf, Hotel, India, Juliet, Kilo, Lima, Mike, November, Oscar, Papa, PQ, Quebec, Romeo, Sierra, Tango, Uniform, Victor, Whiskey, X-Ray, WXY, Yankee, Zulu. Did I get it right?
And that concludes the NATO phonetic alphabet, entry 826.
I'm embarrassed that I can't just say the alphabet without having to think about
it. You were having to think more about which letter comes next than what... If you had to just spell something, like let's spell your name in NATO letters. Can you do that quicker?
Juliet, Oscar, Hotel, November, Romeo, Oscar, Delta, Echo, Romeo, India,
It takes me a second.
Charlie. Kilo.
It takes me a second on a lot of them.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is P? Oscar. Papa. It's Papa, right?
Papa, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like it's in there somewhere, but I can't just rattle it off. And you want to be able to rattle off because that's what it's for, right?
Yeah, right.
P as in Papa. R as in Romeo.
I think if you used it every day or every week, you'd get so you could just spell stuff. I mean, you're here. I could do it. At least as quickly as I can do the alphabet.
And you hadn't thought about it in decades probably. It doesn't come up much in daily life, but there are certain
sectors where it's still very important.
I have used it. Well, you use it sometimes when you're on a customer service call and they're like, what? And
I always feel weird using it there. Like, I feel like there I should be like, I shouldn't say S as in Sierra. I should say S as in Steve or yeah. something, you know, like you sound like a weirdo if you're doing Tango Yankee.
A lot of people will try and spell stuff to me that are like, Susan.
Yeah. They seem to have their own
Instagram. And I'm like, I just do the one, do the normal.
I was
one.
On once with an airline and the guy on airlines, it comes up a lot because you have a, not to spell your name, which they can usually figure out, but because there's that six letter or that six character code that identifies your reservation.
Oh,
you know, and that's right. Totally random. You know, if you say MVQ and they type in NBQ, it's not going to work.
Right.
And that's the moment where some guy was reading me my number back to me. And he was like, that's M as in Mike, C as in Charlie. And then he said, S as in Snorlax, I think. He literally said a Pokemon. And I was like, what? And he was like, sorry, S as in Steve. And that's when I realized this guy must have had some other job where he had to spell the telemarketer things in Pokemons.
Right.
He was
Snorlax.
He was some Nintendo phone guy, and he had to be that's
genius.
That's P as in Pikachu, C as in Charmander. Did you just say S as in Snorlax? It's kind of colloquially known as the NATO phonetic alphabet, that Alpha Bravo Charlie thing.
Although it's all in English, and NATO is obviously in a lot of languages.
Well, that's the thing. The official name is the International Radio Telephony Spelling Alphabet. Still used in all kinds of communications and aviation fora today.
Because the international language of aviation is English.
Yes, but internationalization is a big part of the story of how we landed on this one 26-word system for the Roman alphabet. It wasn't always that way. And in fact, like a lot of this is being drawn from this amazing old, looks hand-typed, document from Ohio State University in the 50s. Ohio State did a lot of the early work that led to the formation of the alphabet. And it has an appendix where it's literally dozens of pages of international alphabets. And I could just look at this all day. Like, like here's tropical radio telephony in Guatemala. Alfredo Benjamin Carlos David Enrique, that's your alphabet. The Hungarian is A as in Adam, B Balint, C as in Cecil.
I've been to Balint.
You have. Oh, it's a place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they tend to be proper names, these systems that kind of accreted over the years. They can be geographic. Here's some Italian one that's clearly all place names. Asti, Bari, Como. But also it can be people's names. That's also common. Alberto, Bernardo. Or here's one that's Anna Battista, Carlo, Davide, Ernesto. But this comes with literally dozens of these, and I think I could just read these all day, but it would not be an interesting omnibus. But I was just fascinated by this. For this system to work, you need an alphabet that is acrophonic, and I did not know what acrophony is, but that's an alphabet where the name of every letter begins with the letter. And you'd think that would be obvious. That's how Greek is, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, but
right.
In fact, it is not how English is. Like, S, if you were to write out S, it would begin with an E, not an S.
Right.
If you were to write out W, it would begin with a D, not a W. So English is not acrophonic, but it has this problem of a lot of the letters sounding very similar.
Yeah.
An early document pointing out this problem notes that A, H, J, and K could be mistaken for each other. Then you have all the rhyming B, C, D, E, G, P, T, V, Z ones.
Right. GBV could be mistaken for an actual pop band.
Yeah, GBV. You could say Guided by Voices somewhere, and they could just hear, did you say DDT? Did you say DVD? F, S, and X are all very similar. I, R, and Y, that's a little bit of a stretch, but definitely I and Y. Then L, M, N kind of rhyme, and then Q, U, and potentially W. Basically, according to this list, every letter in English is a problem except for O. O would be our only letter that you never have to say O as in.
O.
Because it doesn't sound like any other letter.
O. How would you spell O? Oh.
I guess if you're writing out, I think it would be OH. If you're writing, say,
oh, I see.
PEE for P or oh. CUE for
Q. It kind of feels like it might start with an A, like, oh, well, no, it's still a oh sound. You're better at this stuff than I am.
You're saying sounds that we don't have in English, and you're like, you're right, it's so confusing.
Also, I just remember that Balint is actually in Romania, not in Hungary.
Oh, well, that,
sorry.
Well, a lot
but
of
it was the Hungarian part of Romania. So,
was it a is it a big city? Because a lot of these geographical ones, it's from all over the world. It's like to make it international. It's like our alphabet is Amsterdam, Baltimore, Casablanca, Dinamarca. That's an Argentine example.
No, Balint is not a big city in Romania.
Well,
sorry,
but you walked.
Sorry,
through.
Balint.
Sorry to all our listeners in Balint.
Maybe using it in the Hungarian alphabet is their like Magyar revisionist.
It's like colonizing. It's like Russia saying we always had the Crimea.
Yeah, they're super mad about that part of the.
Is this
of
a
Romania.
Sign that Hungary is about to Hungary? That Hungary is about to invade.
They've been threatening it all these years. It's a big part of why they're so nationalist.
Is that true?
Well, yeah, they're mad. You know, the Treaty of Trianon like cut Hungary in 7 pieces.
It's funny to still have a right-wing guy who's mad about the Treaty of Trianon.
It's the funny thing about Hungary. I think the only reason they sided with the Nazis is that Hitler was like, I'll give you back all of the Banat. And they were like, you know what? As bad as you seem, and as much as we don't like the Jews, you know, I think that's the selling point.
That's the main thing about Nazism to us.
Yeah.
We can get back that part of Romania.
Yeah, and Slovakia or whatever. I mean, not to slur any Hungarians that are like, I actually don't care about that.
Yes, I'm a good progressive Hungarian.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to leave the country soon. I always thought of Hungary as just so charming with all the goulash and the list.
Yeah, they're
very
charming.
But it turns out they were just a step away from... I guess it turns out many countries were just a step away from totalitarianism.
That's right. Who knew? They're super mad about that one thing, but I can see why. Because, you know, all those places were literally Hungary.
A 1910 Western Union manual is a little stricter and points out that in this one, they're not worried about, let's see, AIJKLOQR or U.
But they're not worried about them.
They're not worried about spelling them out.
Oh.
They're not worried about confusing them over a communications conversation.
I see.
But everything else, B sounds so much like D, M and N. You know, they think there's a lot of problems there. And, you know, this is the idea that you would express an alphabet with a word that stood for each letter is, of course, not new, but it's in its oldest form, it's like usually part of education. It's a way for kids to learn the alphabet.
Oh, yeah.
We all had those books when we were a kid, like, you know, A is an armadillo. Apple. B yeah. is a...
I didn't have a book that said A is an armadillo.
You said apple? Weird. I feel like armadillo is the standard.
Well, we're in Washington here, and apples are the number one thing we understand as children.
It's the main thing we're taught. I think I might have said armadillo because, well, first of all, a lot of those books do have animals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like A is for aardvark, B is Ant. For bear or whatever. But I remember getting one
aardvark.
From...
What part of the world are you from? There's no aardvark. We would never, a kid up here would not know what an aardvark, but an ant.
No, but children's books of animals have fun international animals.
Oh,
it's
I
not
see.
Like zebra. Come on. We don't have those.
I suppose you're right. But we also don't have any animals named with a Z except for zebra mussels, which are.
That's true.
Zebras.
Which are invasive. We don't have zebus here.
Nope.
I do remember having one book as a kid where they would try to do all animals, but then you knew they were going to punt on X. Like all these books would converge at X because it would either be X-ray or xylophone.
Right.
And this book was all animals, and it was, for some reason, it said X is for Xenorus. And then it was some kind of species of prehistoric fish or megafauna or something. And I just remember thinking, hey, I remember asking my parents, hey, I know W is for walrus, and we're about to get to Y is for yak. Y is always for yak. But can you guys tell me what a Xenorus is? And my parents were like,
no. Well, also, it sounds like a Z.
It's Xenorus, yeah. Like Xavier. But okay, that's another problem. Like, you know, a lot of these words, you're using an example that doesn't sound like the letter. If you say C is for cat, well, hold on there, buddy.
Right.
So these are the kind of phonetic questions that get hashed over when you're trying to develop an alphabet like this.
Hold on there, buddy.
That's what you would say when somebody said C is for cat.
C is for cat. Hold on, buddy.
The main thing I think when I hear somebody say C is for cat, many people would just say, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Not me.
Yeah, no, not you.
I say, wait just a gall-darn second.
Yeah, let's get real, Thomas.
Slow your roll, buddy. I think that one of the earlier examples of this is a New England primer from 1690.
Oh.
Where every letter has an instructive little couplet for kids. A is for Adam. In Adam's fall, we sinned all.
Uh-huh. Sinned.
The first thing to know about the alphabet is that Adam is that we are all marked by Adam's sin. B, thy life to mend, this book attend. And guess what book it is?
The B for Bible.
It is the Bible, yes. The only book they had in 1690, except for this primer. This was the second book. C, the cat doth play, and after, does that say slay? It's got the S for F. I think it says the cat doth play, and after slay.
Well, yeah, he plays with the mouse, and then he kills the mouse.
Yes, this cat slays. This cat ate the mouse and left no crumbs. D, a dog will bite a thief at night. Wow, the plot's kind of thickening here.
Mm-hmm. A lot of violence.
An eagle's flight is out of sight. But again, they're still doing the S's and F thing, so it really says an eagle's flight is out of fight.
Right. I'd like to point out that you spent an awful lot of time last weekend looking out the window at a tree that sometimes had an eagle in it, and sometimes you were convinced that the eagle was hiding behind the tree.
In my defense, I think I looked more when the eagle was there than when the eagle was not.
You did look at the eagle when it was in the tree, but you did spend a lot of time with the binoculars looking out at a tree where you could not see the eagle.
Well, you hear the bald eagle, and you can see it move into the stand of trees, and I want to know where the landing spot is so I could spot it from the house.
Because you don't see it going out. Yeah. But what if the bald eagle goes behind the trees, takes an immediate, like,
90-degree
turn, and heads out?
It's tradecraft.
Yeah, and you're like, what? It must be still in the tree.
It's like in a movie where it's like, we got him. It's a blind alley. We got him now. He's on a scooter. And then, oh, wait, we lost him.
Zoom.
Oh.
Right through a crack in the wall.
Here's what I've learned about an action movie. Never say, we've got him. This is a dead end.
That's right.
That has never ended well in the history of the movies. So despite the fact that this idea that you pair every letter with a word that begins with it goes back to the early days of education. And I think there are ancient examples. In the appendix, there's a Latin example of such an alphabet. Which I presume is classical period.
Do they illustrate the letters in those books with pictures of the animals, as I recall them doing in my children's books?
I mean, here I'm looking at the In Adam's Fall, We Sin It All book, and there's a sad Adam next to a tree. It's a very primitive woodcut.
Oh, Adam.
You had one job.
Come on.
Well, I guess he had two jobs.
Yeah.
You can eat from all the trees. The second sub-job, job 1A, just don't eat from the one tree.
Not the one.
There's just one tree you can't eat.
But, you know, the subheading of that is don't listen to your wife.
Yeah, words to live by. That's what we want the message of the show to be. Hilarious mid-century dads. Who wants to buy the new omnibus happy wife, happy life mug? It's coming soon. But despite the fact that there were, centuries of this, it never really became a critical use case in society until the advent of telecommunications.
Beep, 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 beep.
Like, I'm sure there would be times when conversationally someone would say, wait, how do you spell that?
What
and
now?
And you'd say, did you say B or D? And you'd say B as in Bob.
Balint?
Or D as in dog. Or Balint, maybe. If you were Romanian or a patriotic Hungarian.
Well, because B and V often get confused in certain languages, right?
That's right. In Spanish, they do.
Balint? No, Balint. Balint?
But nobody ever was like, well, we should systematize how that works. Because, when you're talking in conversation with someone, it just doesn't come up that much. But over telegraph wires.
I bet some bossy dad was like, here's what we're going to say when you can't hear me.
In our family. Because it's confusing. Like, what if I say B as in buck and you say, did you say D as in duck? So no.
It might be one of those signs in the front yard that says, in this household, we say.
We use the NATO phonetic alphabet. In fact, the earliest record we have of somebody trying to systematize how this would work is in a 1910 edition of the Western Union's internal journal, which I assume you have every issue of here somewhere.
Where is my collection?
Where's the 1910 Journal of the Telegraph, where they tell their clerks that there should be two methods. One is just kind of do the same thing you were always doing spontaneously. Just use a proper name that's explanatory. You know, say S is in Susan. That's fine. Then they'll know it's not F is in Fusen.
Uh-huh.
But they point out that there's a downside to this. Like for Q, U, X, Y, and Z, a name might not readily leap to mind.
Yeah. You know? Quebec or Quebec.
I mean, that seems dumb because you and I are like, no, it's Quentin, Ulysses, Xavier. I don't know what Y is.
Yalu.
Yalu, of course, for our friend Yalu and Zachary. But they point out that that might take a second to think of.
So, I see.
So they have another method, which is you give the two preceding letters. So if somebody says, my name's Madison, and they say, spell that, you say KLM, I guess for A, you're in trouble, BCD, G-H-I, right.
But somebody Q-R-S. Like me who can't remember how the alphabet
exactly.
goes.
Like, can you just think of a letter and jump back?
B's 4, G, no, I
how
can't.
How would you say Q in this alphabet? Go.
R-S-T-U-V-W.
But you have to go back.
Oh,
See, it's stressful.
I-J-K-L-M-N-O-P.
It's O-P-Q.
O-P-Q. No, I would not be able to get there.
See, so that's...
I barely remember the alphabet.
But I guess the idea is you're in a job where all day you're like K-L-M,
yeah, right.
R-S-T, L-M-N.
It's and like then, learning 10 key or yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Or back in the day when you were had to like to type a D on your phone, you would hit 222 yeah. or whatever. Not such a useful skill anymore.
My daughter had to learn it because I only got her a flip phone. And I'm like, hey, you know how to type Q9. And she's like, what's Q9?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was called.
And I was like, what's Q9? What are you doing? And she's like, just doing this terrible thing because you won't get me a smartphone. Ken, I know you've already made the transition to Mint Mobile, but I have a hilarious anecdote. I was driving my daughter's friends around the other day. They're all freshmen in high school. And they were touting Mint Mobile as their favorite wireless service and kind of like teasing the kids that hadn't switched to Mint Mobile. This is why Mint Mobile's favorite word is no. And by that, I mean no contracts, no monthly bills, no overages, no hidden fees, no BS. Here's why I know you and all these kids have said yes to making the switch and getting premium wireless for, wait for it, $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You use your own phone and any Mint Mobile plan. Bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ken, when you invited me up to your little vacation spot on Lopez Island, I was so surprised that you had Mint Mobile service up there. It is everywhere. So here's what I'm offering you today. Are you ready to say yes? Are you ready to say yes to saying no? Make the switch at mintmobile.com/omnibus. That's mintmobile.com/omnibus. Upfront payment of $45 required, which is equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
So it was ad hoc for a while, even at Western Union, but finally they clamped down in 1912 and they recommended a list. And it was a list apparently they had borrowed from a similar list that had been circulating among AT&T operators.
There was already an AT&T in 1912.
Yeah, this is 1912. This is 1912. So phone operators had been doing this apparently for a few decades. And, you know, because they would have the same, I guess, what's the use case for them? I guess when you're dialing a number, there were still letters in the exchanges.
Yeah, that's right.
And it would be a big difference if you were saying, I want FD versus SB.
Yeah, it's Morford 37124.
Oh, yeah, but maybe you would just say the whole thing. I don't know. I guess you could be spelling a name. Because for a telegraph, you're often telling them you want to send it to such and such a place or person, and here's right. the message, and they're going to need to spell proper names.
Right.
I don't know what a telephone operator
means. Oh, well, but
for.
That was at a time when you could say, "I connect me to Ken
and
Jennings.
And give a name. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably what it is. And they have to look it up in a book.
In a book.
And they're like, and so they had their alphabet was the following. It was mostly geographic, but with some proper other people's names mixed in. Adams, Boston, Chicago, Denver, Edward, Frank, George, Henry, Ireland, Jersey, King, Lincoln, Mary, Newark, Ocean, Peter, Queen, Robert, Sugar, Texas, Union, Violet, William, X-ray, Yale, Zero. An interesting thing about this in hindsight is that with one exception, none of these are words in the current radio telephony alphabet.
Right.
These are all words we don't use anymore, except for X-ray, where all things converge. And it does seem like this has been standardized with some attempt to not have the words sound like other words. Like, you know, M is not Mary and B is Barry, you know,
right.
Because that would be this, or N is not Nary, because that would be the same problem.
I think Nary would be a stretch.
N is in Nary, that word we often say. In Adam's Fall, we sin it all.
That word we say Nary once.
But there were a lot of early lists, and these lists changed over time. Ireland quickly became Ida in Western Union.
Right. Very popular name at the time.
And it's speculated that it was because Ireland sounded like Ireland. Like people would say Ireland in weird...
Ireland. Ireland.
In weird dialectic ways.
Maybe it was part of an anti-Irish hysteria at the time.
That's right.
We don't want to say Ireland.
Can we not talk about those people? Jersey became John and then James. Newark became New York, maybe just for familiarity. T was Texas, then became Thomas. Just anti-Texas.
Still.
V for Western Union went from Violet to Victor in 1918, therefore becoming another word we still use today, one of now two on the list, I believe. But then in World War II became Victory for propaganda reasons.
How smart.
You don't want V to be Victor when Churchill's out there saying, "We for Victory." And then Y went from Yale to Young. And again, it's unclear why. Like the new version of the manual doesn't say, we found that that Queen sounded too much like... Frank or King or whatever. They don't explain the rationale.
Well, except like if what you're receiving is yeah, you're like who? Yellow? Yo? Yeah.
It should be a word that's so you can just using common sense, you can think of some of the problems.
Yeah.
It should be a word that is familiar to all, so nobody has to be like, did you say Newark? I've never heard of Newark. You want it to not sound like the other letters. You want it to spring to mind easily. You want the spelling to spring to mind easily. Like you don't want to say P as in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think there is kind of a funny alphabet that uses that premise that it's all
it's all silent
letters. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like at first they would like there was some discussion of whether it even had to be at the beginning of the word. Like should it be D as in ladder? Well, no, it should not be D as in ladder. Like that's a terrible idea. And until 1914, AT&T operators were still using the three letter. BCD, CDE, NOP kind of method. There's some thinking, and this is mostly by military tradition, that all of these alphabets originate in the Navy. The Navy were the first people to, like, even before the invention of telephony or even telegraphs, they were looking at flags, a flag alphabet, and relaying those letters one at a time. In a situation where it'd be very important to not mistake a B for a D.
But it'd be really hard to say Bravo with flags just to, if the other person was like, did you say B?
Right. You don't want to have to spell it out. there'd be the unconfusability of different flag positions that you'd keep in mind when designing the semaphore alphabet. But when you're relaying, when you have one person, because I think what's common is one person is saying what the flags are saying and somebody else is writing them down.
Yes.
And so for it's cases like that where you might want... and so the United States had these military codes, I think some of which are attested back to before. Yeah, some back to World War I. And often they center on words that the Navy would have in mind. Like here's an early Navy system. I don't know why actor, but actor, baker, canteen, diver, eagle... Can't read F. Oh, Fisher. Fisher, Gateway, Halyard. That seems like a, what's that? Is that like a sail? I can't read I. Jockey, Knapsack. I can't read L. Musket, Neptune, Oyster, Pistol, Quadrant, Reefer. Reefer. I assume that means something nautical and not just Reefer Madness.
Yes, it does. A halyard is a rope.
Yeah, that's right. It's a rope, not a sail. Shipmate, topsail, unload. Vessel, windage, X-ray, yeoman, zebra. So except for the convergence on X-ray, it seems like it's been designed with a jaunty maritime theme in mind.
A reefer is what they call a refrigerator, like a cooler.
Would it have been a cooler even back in 1909? Or could it be something related to reefs?
Well, I mean, it might be. I don't know. I feel like there's always been. Remember our episode on ice?
Yes.
I think in 1909, they were already using ice ships to carry clams.
And having not settled on fridge yet.
Yeah, right.
They were shortening refrigerate.
I think it might be.
But there's a ton of military systems. Like this one seems to have been written with brevity in mind. And that's something else to consider.
Right,
like,
of course.
Is it bad if it's long words like halyard and knapsack? Shouldn't it be this one? Ashback, chain dog, egg, fox, gig, horse, ice, Jake, I think.
Ashback, chain dog.
Lash, mule, net, oak, page, quail, raft, scout, tile. And then there's others that have very long words. Like here's a military alphabet from a decade later. A is for affirmative.
Hmm.
And then there's some short words. Boy, cast, dog, easy, fox. But then you get to I for interrogatory. N is for negative. O is for optional. P is for preparatory.
It does feel like dog, cat, bird.
Yeah, you're saying it through a cone.
Is way better than
affirmative.
I think what's happening here is that the code would come A, and A meant affirmative.
Oh, I see.
So like when you see the signal for A, that either the Morse code or the flag signal, that generally means affirmative.
Got it.
So that became the code word. The same reason why N is negative and O is optional. So there's probably this idea was military before it was civilian. But then amateur radio had its own.
Of course, right? Shortwave.
Yeah. Once ham started hitting radios in the 20th century, the American Radio Relay League had its own alphabet. And I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to find it here. I don't know where that alphabet is. But what they wanted were, theirs was Able Boy. Let me see if I can find that one. I don't know if I can find it. Able Boy Cast, I think. Anyway, they just had their own alphabet. So they're just proliferating in all these different new technological fields that need that. And at the time the U.S. enters World War I, we have dozens of domestic standards, and then every country in the war has its own alphabet standards, and it's leading to trouble over the radio and telephone and reading these signals.
When Patton's trying to communicate with Montgomery.
Yeah. This is World War I.
Oh, World War
I. Yes.
Oh, weren't they both in World War I, Patton and Montgomery?
They could be.
But not talking to each other.
And you're right that this is after the kind of the chaos of World War I. This is when there's some realization in the 20s that, you know, next time.
Next, even though that was the war to end all wars.
Let's say there was another war to end wars again, even more. Don't stop, never stopping. We would want to avoid all those radio problems. And all we would need is one alphabet. And the ITU, the International, I think, Telegraph Union, standardizes an alphabet that I think is in three languages. I think their three languages are French, Spanish, and English. So they have one, and it's largely, because of that, it's largely geographic names that would be familiar to people even not speaking that language. The first ITU alphabet is Amsterdam, Baltimore, Canada, Denmark. Denmark? E, weirdly, is Edison.
Edison?
Yeah, not even, it becomes Edison later. I don't even know what Edison is. And probably you don't want to make up words while you're doing this.
Right.
Francisco, Gibraltar. H becomes Havana very quickly, but I don't know what this is. Italia, Jerusalem, Kilogram, Liverpool, Madagascar, New York, Oslo, Paris, Quebec. We got Quebec there. Roma, Santiago, Tokyo, and then Tripoli. Uruguay or Uppsala in Sweden. Victoria or Valencia, Washington, Xanthippe, like a Greek woman's name. Yokohama. And Zurich.
Why wouldn't it be Zanzibar?
Yeah. Why isn't it Zanzibar? It does seem to be a little bit Eurocentric, this list.
Yeah.
Which is presumably why.
Well, and the fact that it's in French just speaks to the fact that the French refuse to accept anything that isn't in French. Although I can see Spanish.
Around this time, this is enough in the public sphere. The reason why I know this has become like kind of common culture, this idea that over radio or telephone you use this standard alphabet to spell things is because it becomes the basis for comedy routines.
Huh?
There's a couple... There's a Cockney kind of absurdist comedy team in Britain that comes up with a recital called the Cockney Alphabet. And it begins, A is for horses. So, see, that one's actually still funny.
Yeah.
The idea is that each is a joke. They are not all funny jokes. And today, a lot of them need explanation. Like, I did not get the next one, B for mutton.
Hmm.
Do you know why B would be for mutton?
Mm-mm.
You're saying B for mutton.
Oh, so it's, yeah, Cockney slang.
Yeah. In many versions, C for yourself. Get it? C for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them, they don't, you know, you don't know the reference. Like E for Adam is somebody saying Eve or Adam. F for vessence, that still makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cockney accent helps. G for police. It's chief of police in a certain kind of English. If you don't know who British music hall star Ivor Novello is, you won't understand I for Novello. The same K for Ansys, if you're not familiar with American stage and film actress Kay Francis. L for leather is like hellbent for leather. M for sis, emphasis. N for a dig is apparently from the Latin infra dignitatum, meaning beneath one's dignity.
Yeah,
so if it's a Cockney who has the accent but also knows a lot of Latin proverbs.
But you know, that may be a big part of Cockney culture that we're just not hip to now.
Some of them are still funny. O for the garden wall.
That's nice, yeah.
The accent really helps for this one. R for mo. That's
awful mo.
Half a moment. S for you, like the phone, S for you. T for two, of course. V for La France. That's good. W, that's a hard one. W for a bob, which I guess would be like some kind of a gambling. Do you want a W?
Oh, right W, here? Yeah.
X for breakfast. Y for God's sake. That's good.
I like it.
Anyway, so this is enough in the public mind that that there's, you know, puns and comedy based on it. But there's this, so the standardized ITU alphabet is kind of an American standard at the time the U.S. enters World War II. And as we've talked about in other entries, maybe including the last one, this was a time when guys in lab coats had a lot of sway in areas that we wouldn't think so today.
Like, yeah, now they're all out of work.
Like last week, it was what, now they're all...
Hide your lab coat.
Now they're all working at Arby's. Or heading to China or Europe, I guess. But you know what I mean. Like last week, it was somebody was polarizing phonocritography.
They sure were.
Chronophotography.
Well, they were figuring out what the mood of music was.
That's right. And similarly, there was a lot of this behavioral, psychological, cognitive research going on into intel. Like to join the Army, you took an early intelligence test.
Right.
Back then. The Army was the main reason why IQ exists today. They were the ones who were like, ooh, we could just get a number and find out who could be an officer? Like,
well, you know, that's still a big issue in the Army now because the Army is having a hard time recruiting candidates who can pass their fairly rigorous tests.
All you have to do is just lower the standards.
They don't want to.
Do you really care if they can do a push-up?
The Army does care if you can think clearly.
I read a long New Yorker piece about this, and they are really, when push comes to shove, they will lower the standards.
Is that right?
Yeah, they will absolutely lower the standards.
Their physical standards?
To make
or
their course, both.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Both.
I mean, yeah, that's a problem. Like I think a lot of people show up for boot camp and it's like, what do you mean I have to get up at 6?
I think nowadays you can leave boot camp still looking like Vincent D'Onofrio in Full Metal Jacket. Like
when he shows up, not when he's born again hard.
Exactly, yeah. When he shows up. And so for the first time, science is brought to bear on this problem of how do we get these alphabets that are mutually intelligible to everybody? Like what's the efficient scientific way to do this? We shouldn't just be saying S is in Steve the way AT&T operators were in 1908. So the Harvard Psychoacoustical Laboratory takes over.
Lab coats.
They test 250 words from 11 different alphabets, everything from the ITU one to the RAF one to the Bell Telephone of New Jersey alphabet, which was women's names, Alpha, let's see, instead of Abel Baker Charlie off of Bravo Charlie, it's Alice Bertha Charlotte. I think C is also a woman's name, Catherine. Anyway, where they record these things and play them back under a variety of different scenarios with worse and worse clarity and fidelity. And they see how good certain words are. What they find is that the current ITU alphabet is not great, but they start to think that they can fix it. Like they think
they're from Harvard.
Yeah.
They go to school in Boston.
We go to school in Boston. Given time, this is a solvable problem. There's no reason we should be half-assing this. We started to understand what the criteria are, and this should go better.
Right.
In the next, in this war that it seems like is coming. The problem is the U.S. has already entered the war at this point, and the U.K. has its own list, and they need to get something out the door. But they don't have any time. The U.S. has its own list. The U.K. has its own list. Each side is being very intractable.
Surprise.
N can't be Nicholas. N is Nugget or, whatever.
Right.
And in the end, what they end up doing is kind of on the ones where nobody will bend, they just alternate. Okay, fine. You guys get L.
Oh, really?
But we're going to name M. Yeah. So Harvard's scientific principles are immediately thrown out the window when it comes to actual geopolitics.
I wonder who they're talking to on the British side. We've got the Harvard side, and then there's some Oxford Don who's like...
So what we wind up with is the 1943 kind of US-UK collab, which, by the way, I found out my wife says collab yesterday.
What?
And thinks it's correct.
What?
Yeah, it's a collab between Kanye and Nike.
Oh, like a collaboration instead of a collaboration.
But nobody says collaboration, do they? Maybe Vanilla Ice?
Nobody. Collaborate and listen. I feel like collab is the natural way to say it, but maybe I'm from an earlier time. Your wife's much younger than I am.
I was shocked to hear. It may have ended our marriage when I heard my wife say collab.
Come on. Piece it together.
Anyway, so we can do this. So we wind up with this alphabet. The U.S. had this alphabet that started Adam Baker Chap.
What? Come on, U.S.
And by virtue of...
Wait, Chap wasn't a British insert?
Yeah, weirdly, Chap was ours. And by virtue of alternating with the intractable British, we got the Abel Baker Charlie alphabet, which I think is still kind of in the public consciousness.
Right, Abel Baker Charlie.
When I was a kid, I think there was a Richard Scarry character named Abel Baker Charlie, and he was like the mess cook aboard the Richard Scarry battleship or whatever.
Right,
he was the mouse that made all the meals. So we wound up with Abel Baker Charlie, Dog Easy Fox George, How Item Jig, King Love Mike. Mike's the first. Oh, Charlie and Mike so far are we would recognize from our current alphabet. Nan, Oboe, Peter, Queen, Roger, Sugar, Tear, Uncle, Victor, William, X-Ray, Yoke, and Zebra. Zebra being a British insistence. We were actually using Zed.
Oh.
We had Chap and Zed, and they wanted no.
Zebra.
They wanted Charlie and Zebra.
I'm sure it was the British that put George in there. They want to put a George in everything.
Well, the funny thing is, if you're familiar with World War One culture, even through movies, these are still familiar. Like the E Company would be Easy Company, you might know this from World War II movies and comics, even though it's very different from the Vietnam era one that we're more familiar with, Delta Company, Echo Company. Quickly, it was clear that this cobbled together one was not great. Nan, for example, sounded just like nine, and this had not occurred to anybody.
Right. Which is German for no. And now what are we talking about?
So Nan became Nickel in 1944.
The Nickel.
But except for that one substitution, that was the state of play all through World War II. This was how things were spelled over the radio and telephone and telegraph.
I feel like some World War II movies that were made later.
They get it wrong?
Get it wrong.
They're saying Echo and Delta?
I feel like yes.
Yeah, because it sounds weird that it's D. The D is dog. Right?
Yeah.
That they're all kind of simple. L is love?
Oh, I don't mind that. In a military context. Hey, love.
Oh, I see. It's British.
Oh, no. I meant stop fighting.
Oh, yeah. But that's why it's not very good in a military context. Famously, they do not make love.
That's true.
They make war.
But how many
times...
They
hand out condoms if they think that you might be making love.
How many times do you think somebody in the Signal Corps was receiving a message and the person said love and they put down their pencil and stared out the window and just thought like, wow.
Just walked off.
What are we even doing here?
Wandered out of the Quonset hut and went AWOL.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
In the post-war period, a new technology is added to this military telegraphy, telephony, radio thing. It's become clear that civil aviation is going to be the thing that really changes America.
Right. Everybody's got a Cessna 150 now.
And I guess very early, I mean, the use cases today are pretty obvious. It's, well, you've got a tail number, right?
Yeah.
With a bunch of kind of rando letters you're going to have to read.
I mean, my dad's plane was November 4 Mike Alpha. And then, 634 Mike Alpha. We just said 4 Mike Alpha.
And you don't say N4MA. That would have that would have intelligibility problems.
Right.
So you say November 4 Mike Alpha.
But you would call 634 Mike Alpha was our full tail number. But then we would call the tower and just say 4 Mike Alpha.
Oh, you know, it's like last four digits of your social.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they'd be like, right, we know. We can tell you from the other Mike Alphas out there.
It would be very unlikely for two planes to be landing with the same final two or three characters.
Right.
Boy, but what a crazy mix-up if it did.
Yeah, it hardly ever would happen.
But every time it did, two planes would land on the same runway.
They would crash into one another, and then it would be in the newspaper again, and then somebody would write a letter to the editor, why does this keep happening?
But civil aviation doesn't really have an organizing body until the ICAO is founded in Chicago during the war in 1944, and then moves to Montreal in 1945. And after the war, they adopt the US-UK Abel Baker Charlie alphabet, and actually get affiliated with the UN aborning the United. They become the United Nations Civil Aviation Arm.
That's cool. So international.
But the problem is this is only an English language alphabet that the US and the UK have agreed upon.
Right.
And at the time, there are three official languages of civil aviation. It's English, French, and Spanish.
Oh, this is too confusing.
This is, I assume, not the case today.
No.
You can't just start speaking French over air traffic control.
No. They figured that out, I think. It must have been fairly hot on the heels because... Yeah, right. If you're flying internationally and you're coming into an American airport and your pilot only speaks French.
Speaking French all of a sudden.
Or into any airport, right? Even if you're flying into Zimbabwe, which was not a French colony.
It was not. It was English. So Spain, the Spanish-speaking wing led by the Spaniards, insist upon and get their own alphabet.
Huh.
So the ICAO has to be like, okay, we got the US-UK one. And I think the reason why the Spaniards were unhappy and the other Spanish-speaking countries, theirs begins Ana Brasil Coca. So there seems to be some attempt to choose words that would be known to other countries. Dado Elsa Fiesta Gato Hombre, H as in silent, H in hombre.
Right.
India Julio Kilo Luis Mama Norma Opera Peru Quebec Rosa Sara Tomas Uruguay Victor Whiskey. There's really no W in French or in Spanish. So all Spanish words with a W are borrowed from English, all right, basically, or German. Same with K.
But everybody drinks whiskey.
Yeah, Gwhiskey or Gwashington. X as in Equis, which is their word for X. It doesn't actually begin with X or have an X in it.
Don't they have X-rays? They do.
Q-U-I-S.
Why do they hate X-rays so much?
Because it would be Rio Equis. It would, the X would be towards the end.
I see.
Because they put the X at the end. Y is in Yolanda and Z is in, I think it's Seta or Theta. So they have their own concurrent alphabet and it's complicated.
Yeah, I'm against it.
Yeah, you don't want multiple alphabets out there. And finally, science is again brought to bear in 1948. Now that the ICAO is centered in Montreal, a French-Canadian scientist named Jean-Paul Vinay, is asked to really, let's systematize this for good. Let's have an international system that works for all languages equally well, but mostly English, asterisk.
Uh-huh.
So that we won't get complaints when this is used in Spain or Japan or Poland or whatever. And so he identifies five characteristics that would make for a good alphabet. For the first time, somebody has organizing principles. Number one, it should be a live word in all three languages, English, French, and Spanish.
A live word.
Yeah. So you wouldn't look at it and be like, I don't even know what that is or how to say that.
Right.
Because if it's a word you know, it'll be easy to remember and pronounce. Number two, it should be easily pronounced and recognized. Number three, it should have good transmission and readability characteristics.
Right.
Number four, it should have a similar spelling in all three languages and should begin with the initial letter. So equis is right out. And finally, no objectionable meanings.
Oh.
We'll get to this later, but I think there are already some questions about some of the words in the current alphabet that are embattled.
And because people in Uzbekistan use the word mic to mean pee-pee.
Can you guess which words? Here, let me read the Abel Baker Charlie alphabet one more time. You can tell me if you can guess which two might be embattled. Except now I can't find it. Here it is. Abel Baker Charlie, dog, easy, fox, George, how, item, jig, king, love, Mike, nickel, oboe, Peter, Queen, Roger, sugar, tear, uncle, Victor, William, x-ray, yoke, or zebra.
Peter.
Well, that's true. Peter. And I wonder if Queen had homosexual connotations.
Right.
I don't even know.
I bet it did.
The one that made the list that then got complaints, I believe, is Jig, which we would think of as an Irish dance, but at the time was actually a racial slur.
Yeah, right.
I guess maybe today, if you're really into old-timey racial slurs,
I don't think anybody
you might know who would be offended by that, but it was like a pretty common and bad jazz age racial slur.
For sure.
So it was an open thing to be like, let's just make sure if we can pick any word, let's pick the word that offends no one.
Well, let me ask you this. You can say all these things in English, French, and Spanish, but how many words in this phonetic alphabet are not pronounceable by someone in Japan?
That's exactly right. And I think nobody is really thinking about that at all.
Right.
Like nobody's like, well, what about Arabic? Or like nobody's thinking about non-Western languages at all. And in fact, I mean, I think they have thought about some of the interoperability problems even in English. For example, when a Spanish speaker uses the Abel Baker Charlie alphabet, they tend to use different pronunciations. They say Abel.
Right.
So now you have to listen for either Abel or Abel, and you don't want that. You want it to be a word that everyone will say the same,
right?
Without the different vowel sounds complicating things. So they come up with a new list in 1952. Let me see if I can find it. Where's the draft list from Mr. Vinay? It's very close to what we have now. I think, this is what's proposed in 49. Alpha, Beta, Coca, Delta, Echo, Foxtrot, Golf, Hotel, India, Juliet. So that's a long run. Oh, it's still Julieta then. Kilo, Lima. So that's a long run. That's the same. Then Metro, Nectar, Oscar, Polka, Quebec, Romeo, Sierra, Tango, Union, Victor, Whiskey. I can't read X, but it must be X-ray. Yankee, Zebra. So it's about half of our current alphabet. But what you have is all these old-timey Abel Baker Charlie guys from the war who are now all in civil aviation or radio or whatever.
Almost half the people would be, right?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody served. And they do not want to learn. You know what middle-aged white guys love is learning a new skill.
Right.
So none of these guys, like it's like just trying to, you know, teach a Fortran programmer C, you know, or try to teach a PC guy to use an iPhone.
I wonder if my dad, because this feels like the type of thing that pilots in the 1980s would still be saying Abel Baker Charlie as a way of communicating to the guy in the tower that they were, you know, like, because it's all about, you know, like, I outrank you by virtue of being old.
Right. So it doesn't seem like this is going to take off just right. because of all these, I outrank you by virtue of being old guys, until once again, science is called upon.
Science.
This time there's a similar kind of acoustic lab at Ohio State University, and we're going to finally get data on what works here and what doesn't. And they just get a bunch of, like, there's a big ROTC there. So they get a bunch of ROTC seniors to, like, say, you know, all the possible words in a bunch of different communications conditions and see which words are most understood and which are not. And guess what? The new alphabet works a lot better.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah. Head to head, Alpha Bravo Charlie kills Abel Baker Charlie, because it's been, you know, it's been designed to work out the kinks of Abel Baker Charlie that everybody knew about. But there is again room for improvement. I think we know that Coca, Metro, oh, X is for extra. It wasn't extra.
Extra?
Yes.
Read all about it.
And so to solve the problem of X being for a word that starts with E, it becomes X-ray. I don't know what the issue was with Metro becoming Mike.
Metro, did it, what could it have been?
Coca becomes Charlie, which is a step back to Abel Baker Charlie. Later, Foxtrot, Union, and Zulu become, or sorry, Fox, is that right? Fox, Union, and Zulu become Foxtrot, Uniform, and Zebra. Or maybe that goes the other way. Yeah, must go, yeah, sorry. Yeah, Zebra must go to Zulu. And then they do test sessions again with those over and over. It becomes a whack-a-mole problem. Like, if you decide that you're going to change Zulu to zero to solve some problem, suddenly you might have another collision. In this case, zero kilo.
Oh, so, right. So but also, like, zero could be zero. To a Greek spelled with an X.
Oh, that's right. Well, zero could also mean zero, you know, because you also have the numbers.
Right.
The numbers are their own funny thing, which I did not know. That did you know to this day you're supposed to pronounce the numbers real weird?
I did not know that.
You're not supposed to say three. You're supposed to say tree. Four is officially pronounced four in the International Radio Telephony Spelling Alphabet. It's two syllables. Five is fife.
I feel like I've heard people do these things, and I always just assumed it was because
they had a stroke
from the South, or it was some kind of
Pennsylvania Dutch?
Yeah, like four.
Four.
What are you talking about?
And then famously the one that everyone does, nine is niner.
Niner, right.
I assume to solve the 5/9 problem of them, you know, hearing a long I over your thing and not knowing what it was. Anyway, so they're judging confusability on all these words at Ohio State, and they get a final alphabet that still has a collision that no one has thought of for some reason. It's up to the Brits to say, hey, do you know you still have N is nectar and V is Victor? Like, these sound an awful lot alike.
Thank you, Brits.
And that's why it becomes either November or Nugget. There's a long discussion over whether it should be November or Nugget.
Because November in French and Spanish would be recognizable.
I guess it's cognate to their Noviembre.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at this point they're moving away from the English, French, Spanish thing, maybe a little bit.
Right.
I don't know. It's a very complicated thing, and they're taking a lot of feedback from the people who are going to work with it, which includes a lot of these Abel Baker Charlie era guys.
Right. The last thing you want to get is feedback, let me tell you.
So there's a ton of back and forth. For example, one of the things they are thinking of is, like, are any of the words just inherently repugnant? Like, are we making people say words that kind of feel gross? Like, Spanish speakers don't like saying jig because it's heeg.
Oh, right.
Which to them just sounds weird and unpleasant.
Yeah, heeg.
It's got bad vibes to say heeg. Whereas hotel is a great idea because they love saying hotel. It's super fun for them to say hotel. So they're like, oh, good.
Hotel is one of those words like taxi where it's every language.
Right.
It's just, or stop. It's just like everybody gets it. Hotel.
And when you look at the list, there is kind of a lot of that, you know, like, are geographic names good because they're all the same, or are geographic names bad because you might actually be saying a geographic name in air traffic control? Like,
right.
That was the argument against, for example, the only ones left, I believe, are Lima and Quebec. Oh, India. India was going to be changed to Indigo for that reason. Like, what if we're talking about India? We don't want someone to think we're talking about the letter I.
Right.
But in the end, I don't know, it won out. It won out. Maybe confusability with Tango. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it feels like the hard O, Indigo.
There was a lot of complaints about that from people saying, "Why do you have all these things that end with vowels?" That seems like it's introducing new confusability by having Bravo, Echo, Tango, Zulu, Romeo. And the answer turned out to be no. It's actually, there's something good about having them end with vowels for maybe for non-English languages. Like when something ends with a vowel, different European languages tend to say it the same way.
Oh.
Whereas a word that ends with a consonant, that kind of gets swallowed, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, right.
Like our word actual would be actual in Spanish. It might be actuale in Italian, actuel in French. Whereas these vowel ending words are kind of standard. Echo is echo, Romeo is Romeo. A lot of the objections have to do with how much longer the new words are than Abel Baker Charlie. Like there's more syllables in this alphabet.
Alpha, Bravo.
I mean, it's not true in Abel Baker Charlie. Those are all two syllables.
Oh, I guess so.
But the other one had like a lot of dog and fox and short words like that. And they said, the old timers were saying, why are you changing fox to foxtrot? You're making communication slower. You're going to gum up the works. You know, this is an efficiency era. And the answer turned out to be that that's not true. For one thing, when you say short words, you tend to introduce a space that is equal to the space you would save with a different unstressed syllable.
Oh.
Like somebody saying fox, dog, and somebody saying foxtrot, dog, use the same rhythm.
I see, sure.
And also, the other problem is the longer word means a burst of static or of lack of clarity doesn't...
You can still...
Yeah, you can still recover.
Trot.
Yeah, you can still recover.
Trot.
Whereas a shorter word might just get lost. I believe, are there no, the only one syllable words left, I believe, are golf and Mike. So almost by design, a lot of longer words have been chosen, but people were still complaining. November uniform. You're going to make us do three syllable words. We didn't have those before. Like we chose union for uniform just to avoid this.
Can you imagine people complaining?
Well, it's such a small, dumb thing, but like today, if you were to tell somebody, hey, we've just changed all the hotkeys in Excel or,
right.
You know, like. People would freak out.
Yeah, they
no,
would.
No. It's kind of a Dvorak keyboard thing, right? Where we have data showing that it'll be easier if we get everybody to switch away from QWERTY, but you still have to get everyone to switch away from QWERTY.
Hmm. A perfect example is the U.S. not wanting to use metric.
Right. Things would be so much easier if you could just kill off 100 million complaining people.
Right.
There's some complaints about C being Charlie when that's not the sound that C makes. You know, C should either be S or K.
Right.
Why are we saying it's Ch? And the fact is there's, when it was Coca, Kilo, Quebec, there were confusability problems with three of the words starting with the same sound.
Right. And also K, it could be koala. I mean, there are people that would think K if you said K.
Right. That's true. And C could be S, you know, C is the kind of letter we don't need except for Charlie.
Right.
Except for the CH sound. For a long time there was emphasis on saying Quebec because that would mean there would be one Ch instead of being K-K-K, it would be Ch-K-Qua. But in fact, that did not stick around. The official pronunciation is Quebec. I don't know how.
I'm sure the French got involved and they were like, stop it, pronouncing it wrong.
I don't have a sense of how well observed there are, but there are official pronunciations for all of these things.
I was taught Quebec.
And they're supposed to go by, you know, you mean for radio purposes?
Yeah. When I learned the phonetic alphabet, like, I don't think I immediately started saying, I'm going to Quebec. But I did say it in my little alphabet thing.
But did you know that if you go by the book, you're supposed to use the British Victa and. What's the other one? Oh, and Papa, I think?
No. I did not know that.
Maybe they did not land on Papa, but they did. They did not like the. You're supposed to get rid of the final terminal R's. It's supposed to be Oscar, Victor. Nobody does.
Nobody said that.
In a nod to other European languages, Charlie and Uniform were given two possible pronunciations. You can say Charlie or Charlie, because if you're in a language where like French, where CH is sh, not ch.
Charlie.
The R is not allowed in any. The R is not permissible, but apparently widely used. And then Uniform could be Uniform, because that's how it is in a lot of European languages. Two of the words still have two possible spellings, I think.
Hopefully using the same first letter.
Or at least a non-standard spelling. Alpha is left with the F, or at least optionally has an F. I think maybe it officially has the F, because the PH could be confusing.
Oh, I see.
To new people.
Alpha with an F, yeah.
Most languages don't have the PH being F, except for us in Greek. And then Juliet has two T's to keep French users from saying Juliet.
Okay.
So to this day, Juliet has two T's officially. There was the confusion.
That may have confused me in spelling the name Juliet, because I think I may always put two T's in it.
Oh, really? When you're saying Romeo and?
I think so. Funny.
There was the confusion over geographic names. There was some pushback on Coca and Victor, because as we noted last week on Omnibus, those are related to trade names.
Oh, Coca-Cola, Victorola.
And then the RCA Victor company. And it would have seemed they were popular enough companies at the time that it would have seemed like incongruous to give them essentially
free advertising.
Yeah, naming rights over 1/26th of the alphabet.
That's pretty funny.
And it was decided, and that was, I think that was one of the factors in replacing Coca with Charlie. Nobody really talks about the fact that Coca was a drug.
It was just the Coca-Cola connection.
Because
in foreign countries, they do call it Coca.
Yes, and in fact, one of the advantages of these is that they were well-known all over the world and pronounced the same. Like, everyone says Coca, everyone says Victor, because those are the U.S. companies. But in fact, even though Victor stuck around because it's a word and not just an RCA product, other considered words were Esso for E, the gas company.
Sure.
Jell-O for J.
So that would work.
Imagine if your tale is like Esso, Jell-O. K could have been Kodak. As we mentioned, that was like some kind of new, catchy, perfect word.
Right, everybody knew it.
P for Pepsi. And for V, Vicks was actually considered.
Vicks.
I guess Vicks was a popular enough brand worldwide that everyone would have been like, oh, it should be Vicks.
I'm surprised they didn't use Fanta.
Yeah. Was there Fanta already? I can't remember.
Yeah, sure. It was World War II because we wouldn't sell Coke in Germany. Not that they didn't want to, but.
The controversial word turned out to be whiskey. As if we should not be, the alphabet should not be endorsing hard liquor.
Right.
I guess there was enough of a cultural dry movement, prohibitionist movement.
Think about all the people that were sitting, taking radio transmissions, and they were like, you know what I need right now? A stiff drink.
I think it's more like my conscience does not allow me to endorse whiskey by even saying its name.
I see.
So the author of this document from RSU dryly points out that it's probably a good thing that vodka, tonic, and soda did not make it into the alphabet, because they were all like late finalists, probably because other countries were all like, see, gin y tonic, yeah. You know, or whiskey y soda. These were vodka. At the time, the Russians were not a problem. This is the NATO alphabet.
Right, right.
This is the anti-Russian alphabet, right. Man. But there's a confusing thing. There's a confusing note in this document about worrying about which combinations were facetious.
Hmm? Oh, you mean if you put three words together that it would be a sentence?
Yes, but I don't understand the example they give. In the ICAO alphabet, in this newly to be adopted one, the only known facetious combination in the earlier list would be Papa Romeo Nectar, and that's been removed because Nectar is now November. But why is Papa Romeo Nectar a facetious combination? Papa Romeo Nectar. Does it sound like something? Papa Romeo Nectar. If you...
And it's all a little lascivious.
Is it?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, is that the idea? Papa Romeo could be a...
Uh-huh.
Is, could and be a could be like saying, Daddy, like, come over here and get some of my Papa Romeo nectar.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I think that
it's
you...
not facetious.
You, yeah, you would need a modern 21st century broken social media brain to even think of that, right?
I guess so.
I don't know. If you can think of a 1950s reasons why Papa Romeo nectar would be facetious... We will be covering this on the Addenda show, I think. And so after all this tinkering, the alphabet as proposed by the Dr. Vinay's version of the, you know, his adaptation of the ICAO alphabet, largely became the NATO alphabet we still use today and has really not been touched.
Oh, is that right? Because I heard at some point that that my version of it was had been somehow supplanted by some new version where the, you know, the slur of the word November had been removed.
I don't think so. And it's really hard looking at the list as it stands. It's hard to see what controversies would are. I mean, we live in an age of ginning up controversy over nothing. But it's hard to see who would get mad about, I mean, is Kilo fattest? Is it a problem that there's two guys' names, Charlie and Mike, and no women's names? I don't.
Kilo could be a drug.
Kilo could be a drug reference. That's true.
Right.
Mm.
I mean, alpha could be like master bedroom. Like, why is something the first? Why is A the first?
I mean, I think Yankee is probably the bigger problem. Oh, yeah. It's either a pro-American or anti-American sentiment, so anybody could get mad about Yankee.
But it is.
But maybe that gives it some cover.
In English, I mean, maybe the most complaints would come from people in Alabama.
Right.
Why do we have to say Yankee?
Why do we have to keep... What's the, is this the thing you were saying that Yankee, the meaning changes as you get?
Yeah, right. Yankee in Boston means just somebody in Vermont that has soup for breakfast or something.
Soup. Pie for breakfast.
Pie for breakfast. That's what it is.
That's what it is. Today, this seems like one of these embedded things that you really can't change. It would be like trying to change notepad macros, notepad hotkeys, you know.
But that's what they said about Abel Baker Charlie.
Everybody thought Abel Baker Charlie was permanent, but this has withstood 70 years of cultural shifts.
How long?
If anybody's going to wokeify or de-wokeify the NATO alphabet, I haven't seen rumblings.
How long do you think it will be before there's no such thing as like radio
right
communication?
If all voice communication is gone,
or all is all just done by.
It's all digit, like it's all screen. Yeah, like your if your screen says NC10, you don't need somebody to say, is that Nancy, November, Charlie? That's a good question. Do you think it's used less now in commercial aviation than it used to because people are reading readouts more than
no, talking? they all have to talk to each other and they all still use it. So no, I mean, as long as there are pilots in airplanes, but that's not gonna last forever. Airplanes are not going to have pilots in our lifetimes.
Is our military and aviation really the only two sectors still using this? Probably ham radio, right?
Yeah, but who's still a ham radio? Actually, every time I make a ham radio reference, I get like a strangely large number of DMs or, you know, like whatever, communications from people that are like, hey, I didn't know you were into ham radio. You should come to our ham radio meeting. And I'm like, I do not live in St. Louis, my friend.
People do does not stop people from inviting me to be on their trivia team. Hey, we just made the finals at our bar. Could you come? We're in Charleston, South Carolina.
I went to my daughter's school open house last night, and her theology teacher.
She goes to a Catholic school.
Was he got up and introduced himself? He's a millennium, and he said, you know, the two things I'm really interested in are the local music scene and trivia. I go to trivia like three nights a week, and I'm really into local bands. And then as we're leaving the class, I'm like, hi, you know, nice to meet you. You seem like you're going to be fun. And he had no idea who he was talking to. None.
The one thing I thought might change this would be, what if we did the opposite of what they did in 52 and what if they made every letter sponsored?
Oh, you know? Wow. Okay. Did you come up with a version of that where they're all like trademarks.
I was joking about it on Blue Sky, and people were like eager to jump in and be like, ha ha, F is for Fanta or whatever.
Right.
I guess what you want is the funniest product for each one, right? Like, it would be the highest bidder. So it would not be A is for Advil. It would be A is for AMC microchips or whatever.
Right, or some new company called Adventurix.
Yeah, that would be the problem. Yeah. It's some crypto thing. I guess how long before there's some Gulf of America, like, we hate NATO, so we hate the NATO phonetic alphabet kind of thing from the current administration. Like, A shouldn't be Alpha. A should be Appalachians or something.
The funny thing about all of that stuff is that every one of these things that becomes a total fixation of the new era, they're all just like such clownish, dumb, you know, like, this is what you're worried about right now?
The Cracker Barrel logo? I
mean, in one sense, I'm grateful because it seems to mean that they're not actually focused on real things.
Every second they're thinking about the Cracker Barrel logo, they're not like, how can we make sure fewer kids get vaccinated?
Yeah, exactly. So every one of them, I kind of celebrate, like, yeah, you guys, it's totally the NATO alphabet, man. It's keeping us down.
The NATO alphabet has gone woke.
You know, we're sovereign citizens here. Just keep them occupied until it's 2028.
Suggest a sovereign citizens alphabet. That's what we need. Army.
Bible.
Army, Bible, Christ.
Yeah, Army, Bible, Christ.
This writes itself.
Deuteronomy.
Yeah, Deuteronomy. That really trips off the tongue.
And that concludes the NATO phonetic alphabet, entry 826.RV2213, certificate number 50168 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media is a real garbage fire. And more, I'm just feeling like everybody that replies to me in any way other than, yes, John, thank you, we appreciate you, we love you, I'm just like, block.
Is in your face.
Block.
Well, I think you're not wrong. I think what's happening is that social media has been so ingrained in the culture for a decade or two now that people have forgotten what they would actually say to you or to someone who said that to them.
Right.
They just feel like they would never come up to you and say a rebuttal or try to explain your joke back to you. But this is just routinely how social media works because they've forgotten what they would say to somebody on a bus or at a party because that never happens to them.
Yeah, they haven't spoken to a real world person in 6 weeks.
I saw a comedy writer I like put a joke on Blue Sky and somebody replied, waka, waka, waka. And he was like, can you imagine if somebody just came up, if someone said that to you in person, like, it's the most perverted thing someone could say is if you make a joke and they say, waka, waka. Everyone just act normal.
Yeah, stop it.
But it's too late.
Stop being Fozzie Bear.
It's too late to not be normal.
I mean, I always want to say, hey, touch grass, but I'm afraid that it's like some kind of incel insult, and I'm not any more sure.
You're afraid it's the kind of thing you would insult an incel with, or an insult that an incel would make?
Yeah, that it's some sort of internal, like, men's rights, like, insult.
I don't think so. I think touch grass is non-partisan.
Touch grass is really good. It's such a good thing to say, but I just, yeah, I don't know. I'm afraid to, you can't even insult somebody anymore without potentially revealing yourself as a Gordon Peterson, or what is his name? Jordan Peterson. I pronounced it in the Spanish way.
That's the Canadian version. Oh, wait, he is the Canadian version.
He is.
There should be a more Canadian version of Jordan Peterson
named
Gordon Peterson. But yeah. instead of just saying weird things about seed oils, he's, just really into the Calgary Stampede or something. What would Gordon Peterson like? Hockey.
Gordon Peterson is an acoustic guitar playing Canadian song Smith.
He's a truck driver who enjoys the Toronto Maple Leafs.
He loves Omnibus, Gordon Peterson does.
So much.
But if you want to find Ken and myself out there on social media, we're both old enough that we got Ken Jennings and John Roderick pretty much on every platform. We didn't have to say John Roderick 18 or Ken Jennings 1974. Which is great, except I have no TikTok profile. Whatever the new ones are, I don't have any. I didn't bother to get my name. And almost certainly there's going to be a new Gmail. And it's just like, I mean,
I'm not going to be sucking those up anymore.
No.
No.
leave it for the next Ken Jennings.
I don't care if my handle is like Ken Jennings Jeopardy Seattle,
right?
At whatever.
John Roderick hates you. There are a couple of guys. There's a John Roderick who's a real estate agent in Australia, and I think there's another John Roderick in the United States who likes to take pictures of fire trucks. And I'm gonna let, they're probably both too old to care, but there's a younger one who's gonna get, you know, the get his profile name on Apteryx and Vaya con Dios. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. If you own futurelings.com, please contact us and let us populate that site with our own content. You can find other Futurelings everywhere you look. If you Google Futurelings, you're going to find Reddit, Facebook, Instagram. They're all out there. You can mail us things to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
I have some postcards right here that people have mailed us.
What have you got? Mailbag, feed bag.
Brandon is the one who sent us the letter opener that I tried to get through.
Oh, yeah.
That I tried to get through TSA.
Yeah.
They let me keep the gun, but I had to mail the letter opener back to myself. Brandon apologizes for almost getting me sent to El Salvador. He was the one who, did he suggest the Dreadnought hoax? Is that right? Yes, that's right. He's Omniversal Hypercoral.
Yeah.
If you give it a very high Patreon level, John and I will do pretty much anything.
Basically, we'll try and take your letter opener through customs.
Like we have not hit our limit yet of what we would do on our OnlyFans for the top mm-hmm. level of Patreon.
That's right. So we will debase ourselves.
Try us out. He looks forward to, I think we said we wanted to do another show about the Bloomsbury Group because you decided not to go on a tangent about the Bloomsbury Group. Enjoy this postcard from a more civilized age and its beautiful WPA art for the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Oh, that's nice. Have you ever been on the Blue Ridge Parkway?
I don't believe I have.
It's nice.
It connects the Shenandoah and Great Smoky Mountains National Parks.
It does.
Says the poster.
Although I think there was some flooding when the big storm came through, the big FEMA seeded storm that wiped out a lot of the mountains there.
All those people moving from the coast into the mountains only to find that rivers flood worse than oceans.
They're so bad.
So sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad. Two postcards from Alaska. Peter went to the Anchorage Plain Museum and thought of you, John.
Nice.
Although he spelled your name without an H, but that's okay. I think. You don't care.
No, I do.
No, you don't care.
Oh, okay.
He sent you a postcard, and not just any postcard, but look.
Oh, look, Northern
Lights. A lenticular postcard.
Whoa, that's cool. It actually moves.
Look what it's doing.
If I cross my eyes, I can see a whale.
I tried to put a video of this up for the Patreon site, but really I see now I should have turned it like this and not like this.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, this is from Juno. It's also Aurora Borealis, not lenticular, but in Van Gogh.
Yep, homage. A painting that probably would be a great
Van Gogh homage.
A great jigsaw puzzle.
I thought you were going to say omnibus topic.
A great omnibus topic, the Van Gogh renditions of the Aurora Borealis.
I made Starry Night out of Lego not long ago. There's a very nice Lego.
Whoa.
They make the sky kind of 3D and fun.
We got a huge Starry Night jigsaw puzzle and found it was like 1,000 piece, and we found it impossible to solve.
It is not fun at all.
Not fun.
Every part of it looks like every other part of it. Let's see. This is from Mia and Andrew. They were just in Southeast Alaska on vacation. They're not writing to tell about the many highlights of their journey. Oh
no.
Boy, what a bummer.
We can guess what they were.
I hope this postcard turns around. But instead, about an interaction they had in Washington. I guess they were in a certain town on the Olympic Peninsula. It appears that Mia pronounced it Squim.
Yeah.
To her partner's great shock and horror, he insisted it was Sequim.
No, that's wrong.
I can only assume... Thank you. That's very helpful.
Don't your parents live there?
They do. I can only assume my superior knowledge of Washington small towns has been absorbed from y'all over my years and years of listening, so thank you. They like omnibus on their road trips.
Wait, is she saying that she's because thanking us because she could beat her husband at
because of omnibus, her husband looked dumb.
Yeah.
He should, well, I guess she says that they listened to it on their road trips, but he apparently was not paying enough attention.
No, he was probably navigating or trying to, you know, not crash.
He was nodding off.
Thinking about the Roman Empire.
Apparently they're from... Yeah, that's right. Just thinking about aqueducts, of which Squim has so few. If you're ever in Durham, I hope you visit De Kine's Kava Bar for all your non-alcoholic beverage needs. I have to wonder if these two people run a Hawaiian-themed bar in...
Durham, North Carolina?
In Durham, North Carolina, or if they're just recommend... That's the one place you must go while you're there.
I was just in Raleigh.
And you missed a chance to go to... De Kine's Kava Bar in next door Durham?
I did miss it.
If you went to Duke and want to explain to us the appeal of De Kine's Kava Bar, you can send any such correspondence to Omnibus Project PO Box 55744, Shoreline 98155.
I'd also like to encourage you, as you just heard, there are so many benefits to joining our Patreon at patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.